Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers. It's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's 2024. Let's do this. Here's the credits, of course. Mike Rickberg sang that song at the beginning, and he wrote that song, and he sang it with Sarah Cohen, his wife. And he will sing the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Also, Patrick Brady, still putting this together. Video, audio, all of it. He's amazing. So, and Vilmos doing JackieCationStore.com. Squarespace is doing the regular Jackie Cation page, and I'm thinking of moving the Dork Forest and dorkforest.com away from WordPress because it's driving me nuts. But those are the credits. But if you go to JackieCation.com, you can get Dork Forest merch. You can get my stand-up merch. You can get my stand-up CDs and DVDs, which you'd have to have devices for those. You could also see videos and find out any number of things. I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 18th year, we're doing it, you guys. You can go to my Bandcamp or my YouTube for extra content. Please donate, is what I'm saying. It's 2024, and I think we've been in this long enough. Why don't you guys, everybody, send me $100? That's what I'd like you to do. You can PayPal me. There's links all over the pages. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. You can find me at a stand-up show and hand me a sweaty wad of 20s. Do something. But I love doing the show. I would love to make some money, is what I'd like to do. In other news, I'm sure there's more things that I should talk about, but I can't think of them. But let's listen to who's going to dork out about something, because that's my favorite part. Thanks for listening, you guys. You're all great. Let's get into the show.
I'm familiar.
Hey, guess what's happening? I'm next to a tree in Denver, Colorado. I'm working the Comedy Works. So welcome to the Dork Forest, Rangers, or Master Arborists, as someone called himself recently, of the Dork Forest. With me, Denver comic, who isn't in the apartment, just because I like the idea of video. So welcome to the program, Adam Caton Holland.
Thanks for having me, Jackie. We're both in Denver, but we're on separate sides of the city. There's just too much star power to get us in the same room.
We're all blown away. We're blown away by just our own. Here's the thing. I lost interest in my own narrative before the end of that sentence.
Sure.
Here's the scoop about Adam Caton Holland that you should know about. He's a great comic. He's got a podcast called The Grolix Save the World. And you have a new special that's coming out in 2 days from the dropping of this podcast called Wallpaper Comedy Special. Wallpaper. Adam Caton Holland. Figure it out. And what's your Instagram? I forgot to ask, actually.
It's at Caton Holland. And no, it's not Clayton. It's not Clayton, listeners.
It's Caton. Not Clayton.
Yeah.
Caton, K-A-Y.
Caton Holland. T-O-N. No, C-A-Y. Oh, Jackie, don't send him down that road.
Oh, my God. Don't do it. All right. You know why I said K? Because K's are funnier. K's are, it's the hard K.
Hard K is a funny sound. I'll give you that.
But we went with a hard C, so it's all working out. Here's something that Rangers of the Dork Forest should know. I've been doing the show for 18 years. We've never had a birder on before. Second birder in 4 months. Kind of exciting. But I've been told, and it was previously by Joe Zimmerman, that there's 11,000 different kinds of birds in the world, species. Hmm. How long have you been birding, Adam?
First of all, I'd like to just talk some shit to Joe Zimmerman. I'm the premier birder in comedy, and I'm ready
Noted.
To throw down with you, Joe, anywhere, anytime.
You guys should have lunch and just go for it for more than an hour each, because I know you could.
Oh, yeah.
It was hard to stop him. So I'm looking forward to saying to you these words. It's been great, Adam. You can keep talking about birds, but I'm done.
Yes. Understood. Understood. And Joe, that is actually an invite to hang out. But... I grew up in an animal family. My mom worked at the Denver Zoo.
What?
Yeah, she started out as a volunteer there, but she spent, 15, 18 years there and just kind of went up the ladder and became this trusted docent. So she worked a lot with primates, and we were the very lucky kids who could go backstage at the zoo. So animals were a big backdrop of my childhood. For sure.
That's amazing. I have been backstage at the LA Zoo where I got to feed a hippopotamus essentially two parts of a Waldorf salad.
Nice.
Essentially sort of a large cabbage or lettuce and then an apple. No nuts. And the docent who let me do that said, don't fall in because you'll die. And I can't help you because then I'd die. So don't fall in.
That's a zookeeper code.
Right.
You don't go back. You don't help it. Don't go back. They're gone.
You got to keep moving. Move forward.
Totally. So, yeah. So animals were always a big part, but like never birds per se. Growing up, we had a goose, even though we lived in the city. My sister hatched a goose in her biology class and it just came home and we had a goose, Penelope, that lived with us for like 20 years.
Wow. Wow.
And I liked Penelope a lot, sure. But it didn't like turn on a light of like, wow, birds are fascinating or anything like that.
Right.
So always had a bird and always had an animal interest. And then I don't know, maybe like early 2000s or something, somehow I got wind of this book. And if any of your listeners are even slightly bird curious, I recommend this book. It's called Grail Bird, and it's by this dude, Tim Gallagher. And he is the head of, I don't know if he currently is, but he was the head of the Cornell Department of Ornithology, which is the big leagues. That's the Harvard. That's the top birding program in the world. And they do all the bird studies and apps. They're like the birding resource. So anyway, this dude wrote this book called Grail Bird. And the book is about this bird called the ivory-billed woodpecker, which is this giant, honking, black and white woodpecker with a red head. Woody Woodpecker. Based off the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so they thought, so the book is that they thought this species was extinct. Like it went extinct in early 1900s. There's another woodpecker, a little smaller, looks like it. And people would say it's extinct, but it was only existed in the back swamps of Arkansas, Louisiana. And, you know, all the swamp people would be like, that's not extinct. I've seen that bird. And they're like, no, you've seen the other bird, the pileated woodpecker, whatever. So Tim Gallagher went down there trying to reprove that this species still exists. And it's written well, it's very much like, it's like Bigfoot. It's like the hunt for Bigfoot. He's like going from backwood area to backwood area, trying to get tips, trying to locate it. And essentially he comes away with what he deems as proof of the existence of this species still. Like, I rediscovered it. And it was a very controversial thing. It kind of split the birding world in half. Half the people are like, he's a quack. Half the people are like, no, it's happened. And all these other birds have come, all these other books have come out since saying, I found one too. I found it too. And so that just turned on the light for me. It was like a very good adventure read. And then I was like, huh.
Right. So it was really interesting birds. And
yeah.
Grail Bird, that was
Grail
called?
Bird. Yeah. It's like
based
it's like
on the
hunt for
Holy
Bigfoot.
Grail. Yes, it's the Holy Grail. It's the Indiana Jones of looking for a giant woodpecker.
Totally.
And now, spoiler alert, and yet who cares? Because we all want to know. I think I do anyway. Did anybody tag those birds? It's been 20 years.
So the areas they live are so remote. It's like old growth swamps. So, I mean, you're in there, you're going in canoes for weeks at a time, getting attacked by mosquitoes, and they're very reclusive birds. And so it's just very hard to, it's a needle in a haystack type of situation.
So it's still Bigfooty. It's still, nobody's got the proof. Nobody's got the proof.
It's so Bigfooty that there's blurry footage. There's sound recordings. You know, the pileated woodpecker has a knocking sound that's different than the ivory billed. So there's recording of the ivory billed, but it's just very suspect.
We're hoping that those birds are out there secretly living their lives without somebody going, hey, can I just put this LoJack on your foot real briefly?
Right. Exactly.
And so.
And they're just cool too. Yeah. Like if, you know, if you read that book, you learn about them, but they were called like the Lord God bird. Cause apparently Audubon was like, Lord God, what a bird. You know what I mean? It's just like such a giant, cool woodpecker.
Are they indigenous to the United States or to the North American continent?
They are. Yeah. Totally.
Okay.
So it's an American bird. And, you know, they decimated a lot of the forests post-Civil War. So, like, the habitat of these southern birds was just, like, gutted. So it makes sense that they'd be gone, and they have photos from, you know, 1913 of the last known one and all that. But anyway, that right. really sparked it for me. It's a great read. And
that sounds amazing, actually. Yeah. I'm going to write down the name of that book, because I once, and I told Joe Zimmerman this, I once read one book about birders, and it was written right after 9/11. And it was about how being like the person who jumps on an airplane to go look at a bird instantaneously. You know, it was essentially, it was about a guy who saw the most birds in a year.
The big year.
Was the name of that book.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they turned it into an awful movie, but it's a great book.
Oh, really?
It's a great. Yeah. It's
so the movie is not good.
It shouldn't be bad. It's got Steve Martin and Jack Black, and it's great, but a great cast, but it just didn't. The book is a great read. It reads similar to an adventure because it's like three guys racing each other to see the most birds.
Yes.
And so it's a,
that's
it's
exactly.
A, yeah, totally. That's what they do. It's called a big year. People okay. of endless means try to go out right. and see as many species as they can. But also people with no means do it as well. Just weird birders who are fascinated trying to make right. it happen.
Who just find the money and literally just sort of live. You know, I mean, there's so much you can do with whatever money you make, right? Like sure. if you have not a lot of money, but whatever you choose to do with that money is literally the definition of the dork forest. You're like, I have to go buy 19 of this comb. And, you know, this is my jam. I like eyeshadow. Yeah. I'm doing it.
Right.
Or
Yeah, I don't have a lot of money, but antique watches are my thing. And like, it's got to get done.
It's got to get done. And I know crazy watch people, and I know crazy makeup people. And we're all crazy. I will buy when I'm in a romance novel mode where I'll read a lot of romance novels. I'll read so many romance novels that I throw away romance novels because some of them are not well written.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
What am I going to do with them? Just give them to Goodwill. Sure. But some of them are so poorly written, I've been tricked into reading them. A friend of mine who, Greg Van Eek out, I don't know if he's been on the show actually, but he writes children's books and science fiction. And he posted a thing on Facebook, how sad he was because he had read a book that he didn't enjoy, a poorly written novel, a book that was badly written. And I was like, I read 6 to 8 books that are crap a year.
Do you finish them? If they're crap, do you finish them?
I'm the queen of skimming.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
because my wife my wife will hit upon crap, and then she's like, "Well, got to finish it." And I'm like, "Just put it down, like, just be done with it."
I used to feel that way, and now I don't. If it's truly bad, I don't have any qualms. But I have lit like $8 on fire. That's what you should know.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if somebody wants to see birds, they're like, "I'm getting in a Greyhound. I'm going to Oregon from Iowa." And I'm hoping to see this bird.
Well, when it gets real crazy in that book and in real life is like, because it's about seeing as many birds as you can in the continental U.S., right? So like the Aleutian Islands, which are off of Alaska, are technically the U.S. So weird migrant species from Asia will appear in the Aleutian Islands, which is really just like, there's only like military facilities up there. And people will fly to Alaska, get little puddle jumpers to go there to see the bird. To notch number 556. It's that crazy.
Right. Do you have, now this is what I've learned, is that people keep a list of the birds that they've seen in their lives.
Yeah. It's called a life
list. Life list. That's it. So you have been looking at birds with the intent of counting birds for what, 20 years, do you think?
No. Well, I'm so glad you asked this question. I feel there's a divide. There's people who are life listers. And there are people who do this big year type of thing. That ain't me. I'm a more philosophical, I'm here. This is a cool bird. Let's spend some time. Let's watch the behavior. I don't count them. I don't list them. I remember a lot of them.
Right.
And my wife has the app and puts them into the phone, but she's not like competitively trying to go run around and get them. But so
a birder? Does she also enjoy birds?
Yeah. She didn't take much pushing, but yeah, I've gotten her into it.
if you like a person and then they like a thing and then you end up going, oh, I would also, I have a stack of comic books. Like I've been reading comic books for 20 years and I never read them before anyway. So
exactly. And it's not that hard to sell. It's like, you want to go on a nice hike with me? It's like harder when it's the dead of winter and there's something rare and you're like, let's go out to the mountains and try to see this thing. But yeah.
Right. Because you live here in Denver. So where do you birdwatch here? It's not like mushrooms, right? It's not a secret.
No, I don't have to keep it a secret. Yeah. There, you know, Colorado, people always think that it's like, it's so natural and there's so much nature that the birding must be exceptional. It's actually better out in California, better on the East Coast. There's like more variety of bird out there. Certainly there's species here that are, endemic to here. So people want to see those. But I just bird, you know, any big body of water, any big expanse of open land is going to have birds. And honestly, the more you go out to the prairie is kind of cooler shit out there. So I go where the birds are, Jackie. I just go where the birds are. I play it as it comes to me.
You know what? That feels you're right. Cause they're not going to come to you. I don't think the birds.
Yeah, exactly. There's this great coffee shop. They all hang out. It does live jazz on weekends. And like, I just go there and try to just observe.
I want to know. So what's the state bird of Colorado? Do you know?
Yeah.
I would imagine you would know.
It's the lark bunting. It's this little black bird. I was always bored by them until I recently observed them doing a little mating dance. And I was like, that's a pretty cool bird.
Is it a pretty cool bird? Now, one would imagine, and this is when I say one, I mean me, that the birds mating is going to be the same. They're flying and then all of a sudden they're attached. Is that true?
They often, very rarely are they doing it in air, in flight.
Oh, really?
I mean, certainly they can, but most of them perch for the coitus act. You know, they chill out for a minute.
I think I've seen too much bird porn. I think that people, you know, it's just like when you think that, you know, like humans, we could do it in many different ways, mm-hmm. but it's the more exciting ways are the ones that are talked about. So,
I mean, flying while doing it's very exciting. I just think it's
really
kind of hard. I think it's risky to their health. You know what I mean? So like they don't do things that endanger them very often.
It's risky to their health. And I think I thought it happened because I've read The Dragon Riders of Pern 100 times and the dragons always do it in flight. So,
I'm going to just nod and pretend like I know what that is and say, yeah,
right.
Duh.
It's a different dork forest.
Sure.
Anyway, so they mostly do it while perched can they be private about it or is it pretty where they're just psyched?
You know, I can't speak for every species of bird. Every species of bird does it differently, does their own thing. But the ones I've seen just seem to be doing it. It's like, this is my habitat, not yours. You're in my fucking world. I got nothing to hide here. And
Take your shoes off.
Do it.
Walk in the house.
Exactly. Yes. This is the type of family we are. So either deal with it or leave.
I don't know why I've made it dirty, you guys. You don't usually get too blue. But here's the I'm interested in this. What made it interesting? Because if it's just a small black sparrow, the state bird of Colorado. The lark bunting. That's it. Do they make a cool noise or do they have a pretty song?
I don't know. They've got the males have a white patch on their sides. They're pretty cool looking.
Okay.
The females, and this is true across most birds. Females are like drab. The females are always just like a lesser version of they're not as colorful. They're just kind of brown.
Poofy sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, but there is also the male has to work so hard. The male has to do the mating ritual. The male always has to do that. The male has to go, usually at the risk of starvation, get food for the female while they're on the nest and all this and that. And so like often males can die while trying to sort of keep the
provide for their
going.
Family.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Do you think that this has really affected the men's movement and made them all reject? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like the alt-right should probably just be like birds. That's the ticket. We get to have these stupid haircuts, and we get to be martyrs.
Right. And nobody appreciates us.
Nobody appreciates us, man.
So, but now in the previous question, I want to go a complete lateral.
Sure.
Are there favorite songs? Have you heard, like, what's a good sounding bird? Have you?
Yeah. I like ones
I'm kind of interested in that. Yeah.
I like ones that are onomatopoeias. So like, they sound like what they are. So like chickadee-dee-dee. Like, I love that. I know.
Okay.
It's more high pitched, but it's like chickadee-dee-dee. And you just know it's a chickadee. A whippoorwill sounds like that. It sounds like whippoorwill. Okay. Killdeer is a type of bird. It sounds like killdeer. Killdeer. I love those ones because it's so simple. It almost feels like it's just like this elegant, you name the thing what it says. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I like birds like that. Those are probably my favorite calls.
Oh, that's cool. It's and when you're out in the world and you hear a bird, are you kind of drawn to it? Do you just kind of go, I wonder what that is? Or do you recognize it in the moment? Yep.
I become so dorky. And the thing is about birding is like I don't know. It's almost like comedy. It's like you can still get better at it your whole life. You know what I mean? You've never like mastered it.
Right.
And so I'll go birding with old dudes who are like professional birders in their 70s, and they know so much shit. And they hear bird calls, and they know all of them. And, you know, I aspire to that. It's like this mastery. And they'll be the first guys to tell you, I don't know shit. You know, so it's just kind of like interesting to do it that way. I know every bird in my neighborhood, and I know most of the bird calls in my neighborhood. But I leave my neighborhood and I don't know what's going on. And I fly to do a gig somewhere and I don't know any of these birds. And now I'm really fascinated because I'm hearing them left and right and I want to track them down.
Right. And then you sort of follow the sound. When you're with some of these older birders and they go, oh, that's a, and then they say the name of the bird. Do then you get like some weird fun facts about those birds? Like, what's a great
because
they're like, oh, that's a whippoorwill, that which is usually a blue and gray bird. I mean, how do they?
Oh, that's all they'll do is like dose you with facts, and there's so much of that. That's all these, and like fart without realizing they're farting. It's hilarious.
Well, that's because they spend a lot of time alone, and they're used to just being.
Just wistfully staring towards the horizon, farting.
Farting and thinking about birds.
I saw this one with these old dudes called a loggerhead shrike. It's a cool bird. And
makes it cool?
Well,
what's it look like?
It's pretty big. It's like parrot sized. It's black and white. It's got a really honking beak, which means it can fuck shit up. Like it's a good hunter.
Oh, wow.
I was just hiking or birding with these people and my friend Norm, who is a professional bird guide, and we're walking past, we're out on like open prairie land between Colorado Springs and Pueblo, kind of a ranch where there's a birding station and stuff. And we pass a barbed wire fence and there's just like a cricket on the barbed wire, like pegged there. And there's like a worm and there's a piece of a mouse. And he's like, loggerhead shrike. They store their stuff like this right here. And I was just like, oh my God, like that's so weird. And then later we saw a loggerhead.
That's like their refrigerator?
Totally. Saving it for later. Just ping it on a barbed wire fence and I'll come back to that.
Birds are not dumb. Holy smokes.
Not at all. And during the pandemic,
that's really smart. Yeah.
During the pandemic, you're just sitting at your house looking at birds. I was watching birds cache nuts and seeds. And then it was so boring. I'd see them come back. 4 months later, I was like, I knew there was a cache of seeds right there. Like I was that on it.
You're that guy. Yeah. I will say that during lockdown in Los Angeles, I learned that one of my neighbors had a rooster. It was quiet. I had not known. We also have these large crows. There's like six of them. And sometimes they get because we have a lot of feral cats and everybody feeds the feral cats. And the
crows
aren't
dumb. I just read an article
about
the feral cats in LA. It's like wild.
Yeah. And so the crows aren't dumb. So they'll eat cat food. They're perfectly fine. They're like, oh, free food, snack.
Can I tell you a story? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. I mean,
oh, I was just going to say that sometimes the crows as a group don't enjoy, there's one place you shouldn't park your car because they will peck your car.
Yeah. They're
they
so
will
weird.
Attack your car. Yeah.
They latch onto that. Like something bad happened there at that place.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. And mostly Armenians in my neighborhood who don't want to see a crow anyway, because they think of them as tiny ravens and the sign of death.
Oh,
but
wow.
what's your crow story?
Okay, yeah, you were saying how smart crows are. This is one of my favorite bird facts to just drop on people. The saying, as the crow flies, that's how smart crows are. So it comes from early American, even like Native American, but settlers and hunting parties. The difference between a crow and a raven is a raven has a strong enough beak that it can peck open a dead anything. A deer, a rabbit, whatever. It can scavenge and go get that meat on the side of a road. If it's not, if the dead animal is not opened up, they can get at it. You know what I mean? And open it up. A crow's beak is not sufficient enough to do that. So crows would follow hunting parties being like, we're going to wait till they kill these animals and gut them. And then we'll come in and get to feed afterwards. But the crows are so impatient, they would start signaling to hunting parties. Here's an animal. Here's a deer. Here they'd do the hunting for them and be like, come up here and caw, 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 and come kill these animals
like
so we can
pointers.
Eat these animals. Like pointers.
Right,
so
right.
As the crow flies, it's just the deer's right over there. Let's go kill it.
Right,
those crows
chop,
want us
chop.
To come. Totally.
Crows. Hi, lunchtime. Let's
exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, get on
Holy
it.
Holy smokes.
They're over here. Get to hunt.
That's. I suppose, you know, it's interesting because if you think about the history of humanity and the interaction with humans and birds over, you know, because there are domesticated birds, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have chickens and geese and ducks.
Parrots
but those
and
are like,
parakeets and all that.
Parrots and parakeets are sort of birds to have around the house to talk at. But the other ones are just kind of egg layers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Are there, we had a parakeet when I was little for a, I think someone must have given it to us. And then, of course, my childhood was uneven. So that parakeet chose poorly to get adopted by my family. But what are there other, like there was a Jackie Wollner, I think is her name, a comic in LA who was a bird, like a person who had birds in the house. Do you have birds in the house?
No, we had a goose growing up. I told you about named
Penelope.
Well,
that's right.
But Penelope lived in the backyard, and we converted a dog run thing. We got our little goose house. It was like a domesticated chicken type of situation.
Right.
So Penelope was not indoors.
Did she have eggs?
Yep. Penelope had eggs.
Did she lay eggs, and did you eat those?
We never ate them. We never ate them. We just let her lay her eggs, you know, and eventually got rid of them. They were big and weird, and I don't know. We're city folk. It was just like, I don't want this gross egg. Like, it just seemed odd to us. We should have been doing it the whole time. But it was also a goose. So, like, we didn't grow up eating goose eggs. You know, it's sort of a little foreign.
Right. It would have been a big change. Would have been a big change. And you were already just getting used to the goose.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly. I don't want to disparage anyone, but I have always thought it's weird to like birds and then imprison birds. You know, it just doesn't feel... I like natural birds in nature. I don't really want them.
I think it's
my
a
house.
Different kind of bird, a bird dorkdom that I would have to talk to someone about why they like having a bird around the house. Because I remember they, you know how like dogs and cats, you know, if you have pets in the house, your house smells like dogs and cats.
Totally.
And if you have birds, your house smells like birds.
Yep.
And so it's an interesting life choice, and I should do an episode about what the draw is, because they are very pretty. There's parrots for in particular, and parakeets are small and very, you know, colorful and lovely.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles there's wild parrots.
Oh yeah, I've seen them all over LA. Like, I love those. They're
so
loud. Yeah,
that's a trip, right? Oh, they're so loud.
Yeah. They're also beautiful and green. I always see them over in Highland Park. I see them over there whenever I'm in LA.
Right. They started in Pasadena and they're heading east. We have some in Van Nuys, but not like in Pasadena.
Yeah. And then there's the ones in San Fran, the wild parrots of Telegraph Hill. That's a great documentary if anyone's ever curious.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, it's so.
What's it called?
The Wild Parrots of Telegraph Hill. It's about. Okay. Have you ever walked up Telegraph Hill to like Coit Tower in San Francisco? There's all these really strange, beautiful homes up there that are kind of old, like hip. I'm sure they're now $10 million, but they're all just like hippie cabins up the hill. Oh. And there was one guy who sort of tended to these wild parrots, which are a big tourist attraction. And it's just the characters of all these parrots. And it's beautiful and sad and fascinating. It's a great documentary.
Okay. And did you, speaking, and now I don't think bats aren't birds, right? Bats are something else, right?
please title the episode Bats Aren't Birds, right?
You should have heard me talk about Jay-Z. Who is Jay-Z?
Oh, yeah. You're like anyway, that woman on the subway when Jay-Z was going to do his big concert. Did you ever see that clip? He's talking to this old, I mean, you're not like that, but she's an 80-year-old woman. And he's sitting next to her and they're filming. And she's like, and what is your name? And he tells her name. And she's like, but I perform as Jay-Z. And she's like, I've heard of you. And he's going to his 10th sold out concert in Brooklyn or whatever. It's a touching video. It's cute.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yes. I was alerted that even if I didn't know if I had heard Jay-Z, I had been to a grocery store and a gas station. So I had heard Jay-Z.
Yeah. It's T-Swift calm down. Type of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard all the music. Even if I don't know that I've heard the music. Yesterday, heard Jelly Roll. That guy's been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, somebody said it. And I was like, clearly not Jelly Roll Morton from the early 1900s. Tell me who Jelly Roll is. And it's music is my life. Yeah, anyway, I don't know enough about music, but I do have many other bird questions. Wait a minute.
Please. I got many other bird answers.
Okay. Here's the scoop, though. Let's find out. Let's take a couple of beats silence to find out if there was an ad here. Was there? Is it something you wanted to buy? Just think. It could have happened. Here's my next question about birds. By the way, I am with Adam Caton Holland. And Caton is spelled CaytonHolland. And that's his Instagram. He has a new special coming out in 2 days called Wallpaper. Whenever you listen to this, just look for a comedy special called Wallpaper. And you will find Adam Caton Holland telling jokes. He has a podcast called The Gravlix Saves the World. Gravlix, plural?
Grolix, the Grolix.
Grolix. And I'm, what's a Grolix?
A Grolix, I think Dork Forest fans will like to know this. A Grolix, which is G-R-A-W-L-I-X, is in a comic strip when there's a swear word, and they do an ampersand, asterisk, at sign, that's a Grolix.
Okay.
And so that's the term for that. When a character is swearing, but they don't want to write the swear word, it's a Grolix.
Well, I think many Rangers already know that, and now I do. So good for me. So the podcast. Oh, so what do you talk? What's the podcast about? The Grolix.
So we used to do these like self-help challenges, just competitive wellness, competitive making the world a better place. Now we just basically, if we bring a problem to the podcast and we try to solve it by the end, and so the guest has to bring something that's like, all right, what's bothering you? What's irking you? And then we figure it out and we do some proactive moves to fix said problem. So it can be the dumbest shit and it can be the serious shit. And it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool. Interesting. Yeah. Sort of problem with neighbors or
totally.
I think that I have a kidney stone, something like that. Anything?
We're professional doctors, professional therapists. There's no problem we can't handle. We can fix your internet. What do you need?
This is the perfect example because all three of you are stand-up comics, if I remember correctly, right?
That's correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and as I think has been established, I think globally, without any information or training, if you ask a comic their opinion, they will have one.
We got it.
And I have a degree in political science, but you can ask me about any science, and I'll let you know that we have either not solved that problem or we have solved that problem. So, so get in on that podcast. That sounds super fun. And so, Adam, here's my next question. Exotic birds where you've been in another country. Have you been to other countries and gone birding?
Oh, doctor. Yes, I have. You know, I'll just tell you my favorite encounter in a foreign country. But this is the two things. I went on a trip to Costa Rica with my family and the Denver Zoo in my early 20s. And it was a wildlife trip through Costa Rica led by the Denver Zoo.
Wow.
And who my mom was in with. And so, right. there were docents and there were people, but there were also people that could go who were just regular civilians, not zoo folk. And anyway, Costa Rica is a birding paradise. And we had a bird expert with us. And I was not into birds at the time. So every time we'd go to birds, I'd be like, fucking more birds. And I'm mad. Old Adam is so mad at young Adam for sleeping through morning expeditions to go see the Quetzals, all sorts of stuff like that. I blew that one. So that was a missed opportunity. But on my honeymoon, wife and I went to South Africa and we went on safari. Oh, wow. And that was, we told the guy, so safari is the coolest experience ever. It's glamping and animals and you wake up at dawn and it rules.
Okay.
You just go out in Land Rovers and look at wildlife all day long.
And that's amazing. That's a planned exhibit. You don't go out alone, right?
You don't go out alone, but there's nothing planned about it. They don't know where the wildlife's going to be. Certainly, they know the reserve, and they're communicating on walkie-talkies and stuff, but like you're just out there, and like, what do we see today? And it's all the animals of Africa. It's just incredible.
Right.
But we told our guide, who was a young guy himself, that we're birders.
Okay.
And he was just like, you could see his eyes light up. He's like, oh, I just passed the birding test. I just became an expert. And he's like, listen, he's like, nobody under 70 ever says what you just said. Like, he's like, they want to see lions. They want to see elephants. They want to see all the big five. He's like, stick with me. And so we'd go out in the morning and see all the wildlife. He'd take everybody back for a fancy lunch. And then we'd go back out with just him and a native guide. And they'd let us out of the Land Rovers, which they would never do because you never know what could come attack you. And he's like, The native dude who was the true spotter and saw everything had a gun in front of us and we were to walk in a line and our dude was behind us and we just got to go through, you know, South Africa, Kruger National Park on foot with these guys, seeing every bird and they knew every call. And it was just such a cool experience. It was the best.
That's amazing. And are there birds that will attack you?
It was more that there were big animals.
Other animals. You.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's not that birds. Certainly, there's many birds that'll attack you if you're threatening those birds or appear as a threat.
I suppose any bird would attack you if you attack them.
Crows, owls, eagles, hawks, you'll get attacked if you're going too close to them for sure.
So the hunting birds will, they'll take it to you.
Will take it to you if you're coming for them.
Right, the robin. Which seems just the sweetest bird in the world. State bird of Wisconsin.
Is it? Nice.
So, the red cardinal or the cardinal is the bird of Illinois. Those are the only two I know offhand.
I used to have a joke where I talked about birding and the state bird. So I'd always look it up. I know a lot of them. Many of them are the cardinal. Lots of states have the cardinal.
Oh, yeah. Because it's a bright bird. It's a good looking bird. What about the eagle? Are any states co-opting the national bird?
I don't think so.
To your knowledge?
Maybe Alaska, maybe, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not positive.
You saw birds, but didn't know what you didn't get the full experience in Costa Rica.
Right.
And then you got an amazing experience in South Africa.
Totally.
I was in the Whitsitt Islands in Australia, which is a southern end of the Great Barrier Reef, on holiday with my husband. And there was a bird that sat, the call of that bird, and there was giant flocks of them, but the call of that bird was the noise that the bully makes in The Simpsons. It's that. It's
Nelson. Nelson.
Nelson.
Monks.
That's it.
Yeah.
And we, to this day, still reference that bird.
That's
that's a weird bird. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, you probably saw kookaburras. That's another one. That's another onomatopoeia bird. Those ones are cool.
Right, because they sound, that's how they sound out in the world.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What's the biggest bird you ever saw?
I have so many more bird stories I want to tell you.
Yeah, you I'm going to just put a nickel in you and let you go. Tell me bird stories.
I got them. Let me tell you my favorite. Okay, I got several, but this one. So for a while, I wrote for the Alt Weekly out here. It's called the Westword. It's like the LA Weekly. It's the independent newspaper in your town. I wrote for that, and I was a burgeoning bird nerd. And there's a article, there's a bird called the Gunnison sage grouse. It's a fat little plump bird. It's got spiked tail. And there's sage grouses, a prairie chicken that kind of looks like this, but the Gunnison sage grouse, endemic to Colorado and Utah, and it's threatened or whatever. And so they're always, you know, biologists trying to get the paper to cover this, and it's so boring. And my my editor was just like, you do it. You like birds. Go fucking do it. We got to do some environmental story. So I went to Gunnison, which is like 3 hours outside of Denver in the mountains, in a sort of drab part of the mountains, not exciting ski mountains, just kind of boring ranch, rural mountains. And I went and learned all about this bird. And basically, because of drilling and fracking and oil, this landscape's threatened and it's on the verge of extinction. So I went out with these field biologists in the freezing February months, March months, when they're starting to come around mating season. And the males, this is like the most heartbreaking story. The males have these little sacs in their chest that inflate, and it makes like this noise, like. And so when they're doing their mating ritual, they inflate those sacs and you just hear pop, 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 and they do a dance and they put their tails out. And it's like a really beautiful, elaborate thing.
Yeah,
but they're such a fragile species that they return to where they were born, their breeding ground, which is called a lek. Okay. And when they're ready to mate and they're of age, they go back to where they were born and they do the mating dance, and the females deem them appropriate or not. And then they mate.
Right.
If a lek is damaged, every bird that was born there is just done, because they keep coming back to where they're from. And so me and this field biologist went to basically a concrete shack built in the middle of nowhere, that some oil exploration company had built that to let their guys stationed there to go explore oil, found there wasn't enough oil, but so they just left it, and it was right on a breeding ground. And so we're sitting there in the dark, in the dawn, you can't see anything. And then suddenly you hear these pop, pop, pop noises in the dark, and the sun rises. And there's all these males dancing around that shack, on top of the shack, and it's not going to work. They're not going to. The area's been contaminated. It's been ruined. It's been trampled
by
machinery.
So the females won't do their.
It's just biologically good enough for them to do it anymore. So it was just the most poignant, sad. These guys putting on this beautiful dancing display of like life trying to reproduce, and it will not fucking happen.
Oh, man.
It was just like, and I was like,
the story of the world.
I know. And I used it as like a metaphor in the article and everything, but it was just like, this is like, you're just seeing a species sort of die out in front of you. And it was really, really heartbreaking.
Oh, Christ, dude. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Now I'm going to need a happy one. All right. What do you got? You got a better one?
Yeah, I'll give you a happy one, because that, I mean, it makes me sad.
That's a drag.
Total drag.
I wonder. Yeah. Is there a way to replace that? Is there a way to like sort of reclaim that land, or?
There is. And you know, there's efforts by ranchers, and just like anything, it's like, it's one of those things where both the wildlife biologists and the ranchers agree, and the oil people agree,
the government
should get out of the way. And so it's more just like, it's complicated, but it's more like Colorado's got a plan. The government has a plan. The endangered species people have a plan. And the best plan is
incentivize
it for everyone
right.
to preserve this land. And that's the plan.
Yeah, just at the very least, knock down that shack and see what you can do.
Area. See if we can till the soil, get it back to normal or whatever.
Kind of reclaim that land. Yeah.
But no one's doing that. You know, it's like, but anyway.
They're all just talking about it forever. Yeah.
So. Except this, you know, wildlife biologist who I was sitting in a pickup truck with, and it's just still one of my coolest memories of just kind of like seeing that, because no one gets to see that type of display.
Right.
You can Google videos of it, and it's amazing. But to hear it
there
in the dawn, in the dark, and hear it, and then as the sun rises, you start to see it, is incredible.
I bet.
I've had another experience like that that's not nearly as sad. The sandhill migration. That sandhill cranes are big cranes. You know, they're probably 3-4 foot tall birds.
Okay.
And they migrate through Nebraska along the Platte River every year. And mm-hmm. Jane Goodall referred to this migration as one of like the most incredible phenomenons in nature, and everyone's got to see it. So I went out there, and it's tourism. It's big business. Like they're there to see cranes, and you see them in farm fields eating and getting fat to move on. But they nest in the Platte River so okay. no predators can get them. At night, they're on sandbanks there. And so you go to viewing blinds. Again, it's dark. You sit there, you wait for this, and you can just hear these weird like brr, 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 noises. But there's thousands of them. Then the sun comes and you see all these sandhill cranes. And then at some point, just they all decide to take off. And the sky is just darkened with thousands and thousands of massive birds just off flying at the same time. And those types of things.
That sounds
like,
really cool.
Yeah. And I hate to get all philosophical, but it's like the world's such a trash fire. And like moments like that, you're just like, oh my God, I feel pure. I feel inspired. I feel like the nature showed, peeled back its curtain and showed you some truth or something, you know?
Yeah. And just you have to be willing and open to see anything like that. I was doing morning radio yesterday, and I think it aired today. I don't know. It was a guy named Stuart, and it was a classic rock station.
Sure.
And for some reason, Pandora's Box came up, and he was talking about releasing Pandora's Box, and I was talking about it. And I said, but you remember what's at the bottom of Pandora's Box? And he goes, no, I don't. And I said, hope. And I was like, yes, I'm a total dork. And I'm adorable. But yeah, there has to be
that's
hope,
beautiful.
Right?
That's beautiful. Absolutely.
Right? There has to be. If you can't find the hope and the beauty in the world, you're going to have a hard life. It's going to be really difficult.
I couldn't agree more. And like, life is hard. And we've all had tragedy. And like, you got to, and it's hard to live in that place. But when you can zoom out and be like, it's a gift. The minutes you have on the planet are a gift. Go see it all, eat it all, do it all. Like it's that type of attitude. And so those moments remind me of that for sure. For sure.
That sounds gorgeous. It sounds amazing. I once saw a bunch of tiny penguins come out of the sea outside of Melbourne on St. Philip's Island. If you ever get down to Melbourne, you go at dusk and they have set up bleachers and the tiniest penguins in the world waddle past the bleachers.
That's so great. Penguins are awesome. Penguins are endlessly hilarious. They will never not be funny to me.
Right. Yeah. They're just the way they walk, the way they live. It's great.
It's very great.
Yeah. What? All right. Give me another one. What else you got? What else have you seen?
You know, I will just say owls are a big fave. Big fave.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Owls are probably my favorite bird. Just generally speaking.
Oh, interesting.
They're hard to see. They don't want to be seen. And you rarely see them.
Right.
Like they're not ubiquitous at all. And so every time I see an owl, like I remember every owl I've seen, they're always just these sort of like haunting moments of like, oh my God, I saw an owl. Yeah. I can recall them all. I saw one the other night and I remember it very well. And I tell my 2-year-old about it and he's like, tell me the owl story again. But a couple of years ago, there was a great horned owl that wandered through the neighborhood, and I was out walking the dog, and you just hear other birds going nuts. And I'm bird nerd enough to know that's not the typical bird going nuts. They're not going nuts at a hawk. They're going more nuts. And so I saw this great horned owl in a tree a block away from here, right behind my sister's house, who lives a block from me. And this great horned owl looked like, it was so big, it looked like a fucking dog in the tree. It looked like a golden retriever or something. It was just a huge, like lab-sized owl. I've never seen a bigger owl in
like
my life.
Like a 60 pound bird?
It seemed like it. I mean, they have ways of puffing up their feathers and stuff to appear bigger, but it was the biggest owl I've ever seen. And these crows were going ape shit. They're coming at it, trying to get it out of their territory because owls will attack their nests. They'll attack their young. They want the owl out of here. The owl stayed
Maria
for 3
Bamford,
days.
Oh, go 3
ahead.
Days.
Go ahead, Maria Bamford.
Bamford told me that the first pug that she adopted, she was lectured that she had to keep it close because of owls.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because a great horned owl will pick up a pug.
Certainly
take
a baby
it for lunch.
Pug, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I can't imagine, but it does seem, it's a, wow. So it stayed for 3 days.
Stayed for 3 days, and like, I didn't have a lot going on at the time, so I was just on, I was just on owl watch. It was right behind my sister's house. So I set up a couple lawn chairs in her like driveway, basically, and had binoculars. And I was just the weird neighborhood bird dude. And like kids would come by and I'd be like, here you go, kids. And I was showing them the owl. And finally it left. But like the crow's tired and it just outlasted them. And I was worried it was injured or something. I was like, what's going on with this owl? And it's just haunting. And then it just, when I woke up the next, on the fourth day, and it was gone. And it was just like this really special 3-day weird period.
Right. You and the horned owl, do you name the owl? Did you name it? No?
I didn't name it. I called it weird. Hey, I got one now. Weird owl.
Weird owl. There you go. And what does a great horned owl look like? Is it brown? Is it bright?
It's like brown.
Because they're hiding.
They're high. It looks like a tree. You know, it looks like the colors of a tree. It looks like bark colored. Basically.
Yeah, just blending in
totally.
So that it can eat all the mice in the world.
Except when their eyes open and there's like yellow in there and there are these giant eyes. I just read a book on owls and people are fascinated with owls because their eyes, every other bird has eyes on the side of their head. Owls are the only ones with eyes in the front of their head. So they kind of look like people.
People.
And so we're fascinated by them because they kind of look like us. Like that's
how
simple it is.
Yeah, it turns out our self-absorption is almost complete.
Yeah,
so
across species.
And what about, have you ever seen a great snowy owl, Harry Potter owl?
No, but I'm such a fucking nerd. I'm really realizing it on this podcast. A couple years ago, that was the story of the birding season, was how the snowy owls were coming down to habitats that they hadn't been in normal times because... Well, there was a huge lemming explosion in the population up there. Their feeding was ample, so species had to go even further because more owls were being born, and they had to go further to all of it. Survive.
Oh, wow.
So ones were appearing in parts of the United States, which they hadn't, including Colorado. And my wife and I were on it. We were looking up on eBird, where's it been last? And we tried like four times, and we didn't see it. And I'm so bummed. And that is this great thing about birding is like it's not guaranteed. And if you start getting into it and like, you know, we get rare species alerts on our bird apps.
Okay.
And then it'll tell you where it is, where it's last seen it. And people can upload their updates of where it was. And you go to that area and try to see it. And it's like 30% success rate, but that's just enough to get you going.
They're on the wing. They might be, they can fly away at any time.
Exactly.
So, it's one of the things about birds.
So exactly. So that's the same adventure impulse that got me into it in that book. It's like, we got a lead. We got a hot lead on a bird. We got hours. Let's do this fucking thing.
You know, I would say stand-up comedy and podcasting is definitely conducive to being a birder because you can, you know, you can figure things out later. You're like, I don't have to work until 7.
Totally.
Yeah, let's go look at a bird. But you're willing to get up crack of dawn. It's got to be pre-dawn, right?
Sometimes? I mean, that's the best time. Dawn and dusk are the best times for sure.
Okay.
It's just when they're most active.
Are they feeding? Is that what's got them up?
Yeah,
and
they're waking
wandering
up.
Around?
They're waking up and they're doing their things. Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series where he learns to speak bird?
You know, I've never read it. I've never read
it. Well, you might have missed your window because it's mostly a celebration of sarcasm. But I will say this, and you might not find it as funny as you would, if you were 17.
Got it.
And it is delightful in many ways. But Arthur Dent learns to speak bird, and then he tries to unlearn it because it's super boring because it's almost entirely about wind currents. And
I love that. That's so funny. That's great.
And then he learns to fly and he becomes interested again. Anyway, but because to learn to fly in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is learning essentially how to throw yourself at the ground and miss. So that's the entire plan.
That's all great stuff. I didn't know any of that. That's good.
All right. What other bird stories you got? You got good flying stories? You got good nesting stories? What do you got?
Let me see. I made some notes in my phone.
Ooh,
let me see. I did the gun of sage grouse to the sandhill crane. Oh, I know. So there's, this is how I knew I really loved my wife before we were married.
Okay.
Is we got a hot tip on a tundra swan, which
is
the largest flying North American bird. It's the biggest swan you can imagine. It's huge.
Does it look like a swan?
It looks like a swan, black bill, black feet, and kind of more rugged than most swans. It's not like this elegant, you know, frilly medieval swan. It's kind of like a honking tough bird.
All right.
And I've since seen them in Yellowstone National Park. Like they're, you know, they're in rugged territories.
Okay.
Nothing soft about this swan, if you know what I'm talking about.
No, this is not a swan from Disney. This is not a working
your mom's swan. I'm talking. This is a street swan. Knows some shit. But anyway, we found out there was one in Colorado. Hadn't been one in Colorado in 12 years. We went to the place. It was this state park. It's a massive state park, and we couldn't locate it. And we were both new to birding. We had on tennis shoes. We're in mud. We're like soaking wet. And I was just like, this is a loss. This is a fucking loss. This is miserable. Let's like go home. And my wife, I have never been really tech savvy. She's like, well, let me just try. And she like pulled up. She's like, okay, there was an update 40 minutes ago. It's a mile and a half that way. And we're like, all right, fuck it. And we just start tromping through the marsh.
Oh, you're hiking.
Oh yeah. We're out there like doing it.
And ill-equipped.
And ill-equipped. And novices. Yeah. We've got binoculars. We know enough to right? have that. But like otherwise pretty not as outdoorsy as we now are capable of doing. But yeah, and so we were like scratched up, and then we just round a corner and there's like a small lake, and there's the most massive swan I've ever seen in my life. And wow. I was just like, yeah, we did it. We stayed the course, and like, I love this woman. And
yes.
let's go buy some hiking boots. Like, let's go. And we went to REI the next day. We threw away our shoes. We went to REI. We both got hiking boots, and like, we've been birding ever since. So that was like...
Right.
Arbor.
Is there what would you recommend people get if they're going to end up hiking boots? Clearly some sort
people
of
always ask me this. It's like a trusty pair of binoculars for sure, and like anything, it's pay for what you get. So it's like,
right,
the more you pay, yeah, the better they are,
whatever you can afford initially, and then yeah, sort of level up as you can.
Totally,
it's just
totally
like a video game. Sure.
Yep.
But would you wear ducks, like sort of a waterproof one?
It depends on where you're birding. I just think most places have areas you can drive to and then get out and walk around the path around the lake or trail through the woods or whatever. So just hiking boots. But also a lot of people ask me like, how do I get into birding? And I usually say, buy a book of birds in your area, just birds of Colorado, birds of Denver, birds of whatever town you're in.
Andy bought a book of birds of Los Angeles.
Totally.
He was into it because his dad was into birds. And so him and his dad would sit in the backyard, and his dad would point out the different birds that were on the like the phone line, right?
He's that's like, how you do it. Yeah, there's that. Yeah. There's that. I've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. They're on it. They know the birds in the neighborhood. They know the sounds. They're going to be way better birders than me. But yeah, start in your neighborhood. Start in your backyard. Bird locally. Think globally. And if you're into the ones in your
right.
backyard,
and if you're into it,
suddenly you'll be curious about the ones 20 miles from where you live.
Right. And you'll know almost immediately. Another analogy to stand-up comedy. If you go to open mic, you'll know almost immediately if you're interested in continuing. So
there is some weird formula. I'm watching it happen. It's become like almost like a trope of, you know, white men, middle age of means. Just like, when do they become birders? It's like a hack thing now. It's just, you're just waiting until the dad becomes a birder, you know, and it's
okay.
Happening.
So it's in the zeitgeist right now. It's
why Joe Zimmerman brought it up and why I brought it up. It's starting to happen. It's getting out there.
It's starting to happen. Maybe it goes cyclical. Maybe there's a cycle, and that's fine.
That's fine.
You know, it seems like a harmless especially, there's Andy's dad was he trained bird dogs for hunting.
Oh yeah.
But he stopped hunting when he started liking looking at birds. But he still taught pointers, and he trained them for field trials and stuff.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I had a Chesapeake Bay Retriever for years. We never hunted, but that's a birding dog. Those are the ones that jump out of boats and grab the duck that's been shot and like
right, bring watching, it back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had a couple duck decoys, and that was what that dog was meant to do for sure.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we have a couple more minutes if you want to tell me. You got a couple of favorite bird stories you haven't told, or
I think I've well go ahead
not.
Go ahead
your call.
I think I've exhausted the
it?
Bird stories
just...
that I wanted to tell you, but I'm curious if you have any bird memories that stand out as like, or were you ever, I mean, obviously the penguins on the bleachers, but has there ever been a time right. that a bird made you stop and be like, huh, birds?
Birds. Well, that rooster in my neighborhood, I was like, I didn't know there was a rooster in this neighborhood. And now I hear that rooster because during lockdown, of course, there were no planes and there was very little traffic. And Los Angeles, California was eerily quiet. Yeah. And you could hear like, all of
Christmas
the birds.
All the time.
Yeah. It was just like, wow, it's super quiet. and you could hear the rooster. And now when I walk, we have a couple of dogs now. When I walk the dogs, I hear the rooster and I'm like, which house is that rooster in? And now I have a theory that there's more than one rooster. There's also sort of a bird encasement outside of one of the houses I walk by too. And they have a bunch of white birds. I don't know what kind of birds they are, but
weird.
They're not very big. And there might be four or five of them.
I bet they're parakeets or lorikeets, like white. If there's four or five in the enclosure, that's probably what I'm thinking, but not positive.
Right. Here's something I said to Joe Zimmerman that made him laugh is I said, I've seen seagulls in our neighborhood. And he said, you know, there's no such bird as a seagull. There are gulls. And then he talked about the different kind of gulls there. He's dipped. And it's early days. He gets up very early and goes to parts of Central Park.
Central Park has got
birds.
Good birding. I wonder if Joe, I had jokes about this, but there is an owl named Flocko, the Eurasian eagle owl, that escaped from the Central Park Zoo. It like some vandals tore through the netting and
right.
it got out and it's still in Central Park and it's just thriving. And they like monitored it and they saw it. It's like grabbing rats. It's figuring it out. And they're like, well, fuck it. Flocko's a free owl. And it's in Central Park. I'm curious if Joe's seen it because, like, that's when I want to see. I want to see Flocko.
Right. Listeners, hello. When Adam Caton Holland, that's who I'm talking to. Adam Caton Holland. Caton's with a C. It's at Caton Holland on Instagram. It'll be in the notes. He's got a new special out. It's called Wallpaper. Coming out in 2 days, if you listen to this when this first comes out, which is January of 2024. And you have a podcast called The Growlix. Growlix?
Yep, Growlix.
Growlix? Growlix.
It's so hard. We should have named
so
it anything
weird.
Else. The Growlix saves the world.
Growlix saves the world, which is some sort of comic book cursing saves the world.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Just think of it as the fuck saves the world.
The fuck saves the world, you guys. And it's Adam Caton Holland. When you go to do stand-up comedy in New York, do you ever go to Central Park or anything?
Yes, I do. I've started traveling with binoculars. So like I just roll into a new place and I'm trying to do what I can do, trying to get in where I fit in.
That's it. You might as well. It's gets you out of the hotel, gets you up early in the day, gets the day started.
You know, it's funny.
I think it's
like
kind of healthy.
It's way healthy. And I am friends, my good birding buddy, who I go birding with all the time, my buddy Pat, is a drummer in Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. It's a massive band. They sell out stadiums. Like, they're huge. And Pat is a rocker guy who's, like, trying to live healthier on the road. And he's just gotten full into birds. And so he and I go birding all the time. And it is, like, it's a really healthy hobby.
It's not a bad hobby at all.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Afterwards, you're going to eat a cup of croissant and a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
It's fine.
You're going to hang out with like liberal people who are into saving the planet and like a couple of craft beers talking about birds. It's like that type of people. It's nothing wrong with it.
I'm okay with ending it there. It's very sweet. Rangers, go find Adam's special wallpaper. And thanks for doing the show, Adam.
Thanks for letting me talk about birds. This ruled.
All right. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was more birds.
Birds.
It was
a show with birds or a show?
It was entirely Adam. Caton Holland is a bird. And he has come to dork out about people who watch him.
a bird watcher.
He is he's a Denver comic and he's got a new special coming out actually in like 3 days from when this drops called Wallpaper. And he's got a He's got a podcast called The Grovlick Saves the World. The Growlick Saves the World.
Is that a bird?
No, the Growlick is the actual name of that thing in comic books where it's all symbols instead of swearing.
Oh, right. That's right. I knew that word. I forgot.
Right. And him and two of his friends have started the podcast with a very complicated name.
Right.
That everybody's
except
that
they can probably just use the symbols.
They could just use the symbols. They don't. I had to learn really? How to say Growlick and then say it wrong.
Oh.
So, but he was fascinating. You know, I just did the Joe Zimmerman with about birds.
Yep.
And
do they know each other? They could be like birding buddies.
That's what I said. And he said, oh, we will be now. And
good. That's what this is for. Making connections.
He told me that his mom was a volunteer at the zoo until they finally hired her. So he grew up around a lot of animals. They had a pet goose when he was a kid.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, but it called Penelope.
Penelope the goose.
And they did not eat the eggs.
Geese are mean.
Geese can be mean. They can be very protective at the very least. They can be mean to possibly those they don't love.
This is my mom calling.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a great episode. Everybody should totally watch about birds.
It's true.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay. Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?